reading by Walter de la Mare. "Is there anyone there?" said the traveler, knocking on the moonlit door. And his horse in the silence clamped the grasses on the forest's ferny floor. And a bird flew up out of the turret above the traveler's head. And he smote on the door a second time. "Is anyone there?" he said. But no one descended to the traveler. No head from the leaf-fringed sill leaned over and looked into his gray eyes, where he stood perplexed and still. Then he suddenly smote on the door even louder and lifted his head. "Tell them I came," and no one answered, "that I kept my word," he said. In a Peanuts cartoon, Lucy sits at her school desk, bored to death, and the teacher asks her a multiplication question. Lucy responds, "Why do I have to learn multiplication if we're all going to die anyway?" And the teacher is not amused and repeats the question. Lucy mutters, "Teachers do not appreciate us big picture people." Lucy echoes the wisdom of the Hebrew Bible. "All work is vanity. What do people gain from all their toil under the sun?" Oscar Wilde wrote, "Work is the last resource of those who know not how to dream." And despite such wit and cynicism, the prevailing work ethic does follow Poor Richard's almanac. An idle brain is the devil's playground, so stay busy. Busy at what? Doesn't matter. A bumper sticker warns, "Jesus is coming. Look busy." My remarks today apply whether you are 9 years old or 90, whether you are now employed or recently laid off or setting off in new directions or retired or doing volunteer service. My remarks apply whether you may be content or bored, confused or thrilled, hopeful or fed up. They apply whether the cup of your life seems overflowing pardon me, or empty. Let's try a thought experiment. I'm going to say just one word, and then just notice the next word that comes to mind. Ready? Here's the word. Work-related. For some of us, does work-related suggest joy, enthusiasm, energy, abundance, anticipation, hope? For others of us, does work-related suggest stress, depression, injury, conflict, fear, aggression, burnout? And other unhappy experiences. Let's turn the clock back to 1884. Reverend Russell Conwell comes to Grace Baptist Church, a small struggling congregation in Philadelphia. Conwell prepares a fiery motivational sermon. It's entitled Acres of Diamonds. It's a sermon that he will deliver more than 6,000 times in the next two decades. Some people never get enough. What is this? But in this sermon, Conwell tells the story of Ali Hafed, a Persian farmer, who learns from the local priest that vast fields of gemstones lie far beyond the mountains. So Ali Hafed roams far and wide searching for wealth. He sells his farm to finance the expeditions. Finally, in exhaustion, he dies a broken man. But soon after Ali Hafed's death, the farmer who bought his land is leading a camel across it when a gleam catches his eye on the ground. And there on the ground, he discovers acres of diamonds right in Ali Hafed's backyard. Mr. Conwell offers other inspiring stories of people who search close to home and find fabulous wealth. I say to you, you ought to be rich. There are things more valuable than money, but money is power. Keep clean, fight hard, pick your openings judiciously. And to this very day, more than a century later, Conwell's Acres of Diamonds is a favorite motivational example, from life insurance sales guides to Amway conventions and on and on. Let's shift to Grace Cathedral in San Francisco in 1968. The pastor is laid off. He encounters many others nearby who have also been laid off. They ask him for help. So the pastor sets out to discover effective ways for people to search for vocation, for a calling amidst changing landscapes. He interviews people over 2 years. And finally, in December of 1970, he has only $5.18 to his name. Nevertheless, he writes up his findings in a manuscript entitled, "What Color Is Your Parachute?" And not having a publisher, he runs it off on one of those old mimeo machines and gives it away. 1 year later, 10 Speed Press in Berkeley publishes the manuscript, and the rest is history. Richard Bowles' book has been reprinted in over 40 editions, translated into 24 languages, and the Library of Congress lists the Parachute Book as among the 25 most influential books in shaping people's lives. During Bowles' year as an Episcopal priest, he influenced only a few dozen people. But in the decades since, he has become a priest without a parish, but he has served the world. For he has honored both the pragmatic and the spiritual dimensions of vocation or calling. So what is vocation? I think Frederick Buechner, Presbyterian minister, says it best. There are different kinds of voices calling you to different kinds of work. And the problem is to find out which are the voices most worthy of attending to, rather than the voices of, say, the superego or self-interest. And by and large, here's a good rule to find out. The kind of vocation which usually calls to you is the kind of work, A, that you need most to do, and B, that the world most needs to have done. If you really get a kick out of your work, then you have presumably met requirement A. But if your work is writing TV deodorant commercials, the chances are that you have missed requirement B. On the other hand, if your work is providing medical care in a leper colony, you have probably met requirement B. But if most of the time you are bored and depressed by it, the chances are that you have not only bypassed requirement A, but probably you aren't helping your patients all that much either. Neither the hair shirt nor the soft berth will do. The place to which you are called is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deepest hungers meet. Oh, let me paraphrase that just a bit. Vocational discernment and awareness is more a verb than a noun, and it emerges at places where two distinct trajectories intersect. And one of these trajectories represents all of the world's deepest hungers and needs. And then there's another trajectory, your own deepest gladness, your joys, gratitude, and being at peace inside your own skin. And both of these trajectories, of course, will be shifting over time. They're not static. They change year to year. For me, sometimes day to day. These needs shift, as do our deepest joys. So how might we pay closer attention to these changing trajectories and the occasions when they intersect. My incentive for today comes from having discovered this past spring David Brooks' new book entitled The Road to Character. And I think you might anticipate that his chosen title is a mirror image of The Road to Success, which, of course, is what we were all acculturated to. The Road to Character is his chosen title. And he makes a distinction between what he calls the resume virtues and the eulogy virtues, or what I would call the character virtues. And he writes, the resume virtues are the skills that you bring to the job market and that contribute to external success. Great. The eulogy virtues, or the character virtues, are deeper, at the core of your being. Whether you are kind, brave, honest, what kind of relationships you formed. Our education system, of course, is oriented around resume virtues, as is most public conversation. And most of us have developed clearer strategies for how to achieve career success than for how to develop character. And Brooks continues, we are called to fulfill both of these personae. We must master the art of living within the tension between these two natures, these two roads, the road to success and the road to character. So here's my question. How has it been for you in traversing these two roads? The road to identity, recognition, success, and the road to character virtues. To what extent do these two roads seem to be in conflict for you? How might they be reconciled and mutually life-giving? Let's try another thought experiment. You'll see, by the way, in my time here, I do lots of thought experiments. Here's what I'd like you to do. Make a mental list of six of your closest friends. Just a mental list, six. Who are the people who believe in you and trust you, who value your unique gifts, your dreams? They're invested in your well-being. Six closest friends. Okay, you've each got some folks in mind. Now, I'd like you to mentally circle the names of those who, if you were to suddenly face a life crisis, they would arrange to drop their commitments and come and spend 3 days with you to be present, to support and encourage you. They would come and spend 3 days with you. Their presence. We talked about presence last week. They would share their presence with you. So, you've circled the names of those on your list who would drop everything and spend 3 days with you. One more step. Put a star by the names of all those you have circled. If you have personally spoken to them within the past 30 days about something that matters, you have personally had a conversation with them about stuff that matters, STM. So here's my question. As you look at your mental list, especially those with circles and stars, are they on your list more because of resume virtues or character virtues, or maybe some combination? Here's how David Brooks describes those who develop character virtues. And if you've seen his book, you know that he goes on to give several examples, including Eisenhower, and I forget some of the others. But these are what he sees as the common denominator. They are acutely aware of their own weaknesses. They have waged internal struggles and have emerged with a measure of self-respect. They seem to possess inner cohesion. They are calm and rooted and not blown off course by storms. They don't crumble in adversity. Their minds are consistent and their hearts are dependable. They radiate moral joy. I hope you're thinking of your list. They answer softly when challenged, and they are restrained when others may provoke them, but they get things done. They perform acts of service with the same modest, everyday spirit that they display when they're getting groceries. They're not thinking about what impressive work they might be getting credit for. They just seem delighted by the flawed people around them. They make you feel funnier and smarter when you're with them. They have not led lives that are conflict-free, but they have struggled toward maturity. These are the people who have built a strong inner character. That's from David Brooks. So here is my question. Among those names on your mental list, how might character virtues be reflected? I want to close with a final story. This is from just a few days right here in Williamsburg. About 10 days ago on a Wednesday evening at the Kaplan Arena on the William and Mary campus. Some of you may have been there. The arena was overflowing with thousands of students crowding around hundreds of display tables, filling the building on all levels. And each of the tables and its spokespersons offered meaningful connections and pathways to character by activities that honor and develop character virtues. Now, to be sure, some of the more career-oriented organizations were represented, but so too were our campus ministries. And I had the privilege of sitting at our UU table for 40 or 45 minutes while Austin took off and roamed around the hall. It was wonderful. The spirit of that evening reflected those less visible, less goal-driven character virtues, such as those on David Brooks's list from a moment ago. And of this much I am very sure, because I had the privilege to sit at the UU table and to chat with students who came up who wanted to engage and who actually did sign the list saying, yes, we want to hear more. And I think Austin had a party with them this past Thursday night. Yes, these are people who want more than careerism. I know because I spoke with them. Their questions were far more than what's in it for me. And I saw that in many of the organizations displayed around Kaplan Arena that week. So I had the pleasure of experiencing at this highly competitive and goal-focused university, which I know something about having been an inmate at some of those places before, I discovered that the road to character and the road to success need not be in opposition. And they just may be complementary. So I look forward to meeting with the 15 to 20 students who signed up expressing interest in UUism that evening. Friends, the road to character is alive and well. Just what could it be like for you and me if the roads to character and the roads to success could be fully integrated? Not only on the William and Mary campus, but here at WUU and far beyond. Lincoln wrote, "I am not bound to win, but I am bound to be true. I am not bound to succeed, but I am bound to live up to what light I have, and just maybe to radiate that light to others." May this be so for us, friends, as we journey together on the roads to success and to character.